Afternoon. I'm Tim Griffin. I'm an agronomist at the ARS facility in Orono, Maine, the New England Plant Soil and Water Lab. We're on the campus of the University of Maine. I want to just first give credit to the other individuals that are listed here. Rick Kurzbergen, who's at the University of Maine, works for Cooperative Extension, has been a real pivotal person in moving organic dairy forward. Two faculty at the University of Vermont, Heather Darby and Sid Bosworth. Heather's here today. And Chuck Schwab at the University of New Hampshire. There are a lot of other people that I'll either mention directly or indirectly as we go through. I'm not sure what the rules are for the tri-societies in terms of co-authors, but it probably doesn't extend to all of these people. This is actually the story that I want to tell today, is there are a lot of people involved in trying to develop a research database that will service the organic dairy industry in New England. And those people come from a variety of institutions or belong to a variety of groups. So, for example, over here we have three land-grant institutions that are involved in varying in numbers of projects, the universities of Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. These two groups here have really been pivotal. The Maine organic milk producers and the Vermont organic grain growers really, really have taken a lot of leadership in both formulating questions that we as researchers and educators can address, but also, you know, developing their own educational strategies and those types of things. I work for ARS, but there's actually now three ARS locations that are involved to varying degrees with this effort. The emblems down here on the bottom are a good chunk of who we've relied on for funding for these efforts. Certainly the organic research program out of USDA has been pivotal. The SARE program, as you might guess, has been extremely supportive. We do have some base funding through ARS in this area, and then some more local things like the Maine Technology Institute. So this is the story that I want to tell. It's a rarity for me. This is a data-free talk. I'm not going to present one iota of data here. I want to show you how kind of the level of activity that's going on in New England and the degree to which institutions and organizations and people are involved in that. A little bit of geography. You are right down here in New Orleans. I hope you're all enjoying it. I know I am. We're up here, and more precisely, we're northern New England. I'm not talking about Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island today. I'm talking about Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. I will point out that there are a lot of people that live between this point and this point. Something like 25% or 30% of the population of this country. So we're not far from a lot of markets. Just to give a quick snapshot, kind of what's happening in organic dairy in our part of the world, it is a rapidly growing component of agriculture in New England. I mean, certainly dairy historically has been an important component of agriculture. Organic dairy is growing pretty quickly. Right now, about 75 farms out of 325 dairy farms in Maine are certified organic, which if you do the math is almost exactly 20% of our farms. In Vermont, they have a lot more dairy farms. They have about 200 certified organic dairies out of something around 1,800. New Hampshire, the numbers are quite a bit lower just because there are a lot fewer dairy farms, period, in New Hampshire. It is very rapidly growing. Most of the dairy, for example, in Maine, these little red dots are certified organic dairies. They tend to be within a cluster, a circle, say, that's about 50 miles in diameter. A little bit of economics. This comes from one of the earlier projects that was funded through the Integrated Organic Program that was specifically looking at issues of profitability within organic dairy. And this was a joint project between the universities of Vermont and Maine. One advantage we have, in addition to having population nearby, although the population of our states isn't that big, there are multiple processors in the region, and particularly early on when a lot of growers were transitioning, that meant that processors were essentially bidding to get dairies in to sell them their milk. Price premiums of 50 to even 100%, really depending on how wildly conventional milk prices fluctuate, when you get to quality incentives and things like that. They do have an advantage of having some stability in pricing, especially compared to the fluctuations that occur in the conventional dairy industry, where they can lock in prices, say, over a 2 or 3 year time frame. Even with all of those advantages, there are still some issues of pretty marginal profitability for a couple of reasons. One, the production levels do tend to be lower, but they also face some really high input costs. And one of the major areas that we've focused on in the last 5 years has been in the result of the high costs of imported organic feeds onto those farms. And you'll see that in just a minute. We, as researchers and educators, you know, we want to target areas where we think we can do the most good, kind of hitting where you think the gaps in knowledge are. And to be quite honest, there are research gaps in all aspects of this system. I mean, we couldn't hardly help but to hit areas that really were in need of information. That includes the production of grains, whether they're energy feeds or proteins, small grains, corn, soybeans, what have you, the production of forages, including pasture and supplementation of animals on pasture, certainly issues of productivity of on the animal side, but also issues of animal health. Profitability and risk kind of permeate all aspects of this discussion. And then you have those areas that really kind of connect the two. The area that I work in a lot is nutrient utilization and trying to develop practices around that, realizing that a lot of our best management practices for manure, for example, are very corn-centric, even though in Maine a lot of our organic dairies don't grow corn. And also just storage and processing of grain is another area. So there are questions and pretty well-formulated questions in all aspects of this system. What I'm going to do is go through and I'm going to talk about 3 or 4 projects quite specifically, but occasionally I'll just kind of go off on a tangent, because one of the really interesting and exciting things in the last 5 or 6 years is once things start to happen, then other things start to happen. So we're seeing a lot of spin-offs of different kinds of activities, different institutions, and different people getting involved as the years go by. The first one I'm going to talk about is reducing off-farm grain inputs on Northeast organic dairy farms. This was an integrated organic program. The person who really took the leadership and prepared this and got it funded is sitting in the back, Chris Reberg Horton. It's not our fault that he left right after they funded it. He will be talking about his program in North Carolina in just a minute. But showed a lot of leadership and really moved this forward. This was a large grant. It was one of the largest, if not the largest, that had been given by that program. It's cooperative between University of Maine, the Maine Organic Milk Producers, ARS through our lab, and also the University of New Hampshire. And this is the time frame. And it's aimed at that question of how do we develop production systems that reduce the reliance of those farms on bringing in purchased organic grains, because they can be very expensive. The groups of farmers really kind of helped us categorize or develop 4 categories of organic dairy farms. And they are farms that grow corn silage or not, so there's one kind of fork in the road, and those farms that grow grains on their own farm or do not. Now realize that with these organic dairies, all of them have a significant pasture component here. This project doesn't necessarily tackle that directly, but these 4 categories kind of permeate all the activities that are taking place. We have kind of different scales of activities that are taking place. We do have some small plot research. Most of that's taking place in Orono on the campus farm at the University of Maine. A lot of undergraduates involved in that. But those small plot research cropping system trials are actually based on those same 4 kind of categories that were developed by the farmers. And that's a 4 or 5 year time frame. We also have field level production taking place at both the University of Maine and the University of New Hampshire, harvested forage, harvested grain, those types of things, and I'll explain why in just a minute. This was a little spin-off. The Maine Organic Milk Producers, with some help from Cooperative Extension, got a grant from the Maine Technology Institute. lets them do things like produce baleage like this on the university farm for a feeding trial that I'll talk about in a minute. And when the project ends, the ownership of that equipment goes to the Maine organic milk producers. So a real big help from a local and state-level entity here. We also have 1 to 2 acre blocks on certified organic farms that also are trying to mimic those categories of farms that I just mentioned. So we're working at a number of different scales. We learn different things at those different scales, certainly. There are feeding trials associated with this, which again are really a rarity. And there are some feeding trials that have taken place that, for example, are comparisons of organic feeding systems and conventional feeding systems. The two that take place here at the University of Maine, which is a Holstein herd, this is not an organic herd. The University of New Hampshire has a Jersey herd, which is organic, and I'll talk about that in a minute. There aren't that many that look at just different feeding strategies that are all organic, but again, these feeding trials are built on those four same kind of categories, with and without corn silage and with and without homegrown grains. The first pair of feeding trials was done this past winter, and there will be another set this coming winter and another set after the year after that. There is a farmer component here, certainly, not only on the production side, but on the economic side. This is actually Rick Kurzbergen, who, as I mentioned, has really been a key person, and Henry Perkins. This is a group of growers from the Maine organic milk producers. And there's a variety of people, including John Halloran, who's here, who's an economist, and others in Extension. And these growers are helping provide information on some of it is the kind of partial budgeting approach with the economics with different practices or strategies, and some of it is much more focused on what's the overall profitability and kind of economics of that system. I just want to point out, and this was, I think, probably brought up earlier, it was brought up in the OFRF publication this morning. This is Chuck Schwab, who normally wouldn't be at a meeting like this, and he's not here. Chuck's a dairy nutritionist, been involved in research for a long time, and has really, really been a driving force. The UNH dairy farm became the first certified organic dairy on a land-grant institution this past winter. So that's a big plus, and Chuck and Kevin Brussel have been really, really moving that forward. A couple of spin-offs here. My lab is involved with UNH, certainly within that grant project, but also in some other ways. We've been able to, for example, take a fairly high-resolution look at how nutrients get distributed within their pasture system. I have a technician, Peggy Panette, who is a real whiz at GIS, that we have multiple data points located in their pasture system, about 150, and we can go back periodically as that system becomes more developed. Matt Sanderson, who is at the ARS location at University Park, Pennsylvania, has been doing a lot of work with the UNH dairy, looking at changes in vegetation communities as that dairy develops. And in fact, the data points that he uses are the same ones that we use to look at nutrient status, so we can begin to get an idea of which soil factors and nutrient factors influence vegetation. Kathy Soder is really been a leader in the area of kind of grazing behavior, and is getting more and more involved in the research at UNH, with and particularly looking toward supplementation strategies now aimed at that period of time where the primary forage intake is pasture, where most of our other activity, in fact, has been the kind of the confinement phase during the winter. More recently, this was only about a month ago, and this came mostly through Matt Sanderson and Ray Bryant, and also the Conservation Effectiveness Assessment Program, CEEP, which is run out of the TILF lab in Ames, and they came to the dairy at UNH and did a fairly intensive sampling over 3 days that really allows them to look at a lot of soil quality parameters, some of which are chemical parameters, textural parameters, microbiology, etc., across about 14 fields that provide the feed for the organic dairy there. So none of these are necessarily grant funded, but once things start to happen, then other things, you know, you get a lot of spin-off from that, which I think is probably a pretty good analogy for what we want to see happen in terms of developing this research. This is a SARE project that was funded last year, expanding grain production and use on organic dairy farms in Maine and Vermont. Again, two key grower groups here, the Maine organic milk producers and the Vermont organic grain growers, University of Maine, University of Vermont, and ARS. Four-year project, and the goal here was really to rapidly develop a database around grain productivity and quality for kind of that part of the world. There were bits and pieces of data available, but there were some big gaps there just in basic agronomic principles. Small plot types of things at three locations in Maine and Vermont, interest from growers, spring planted grains versus fall planted grains, the inability of the investigators to say no to anybody explains why so far we've had 16 separate experiments across those two states. We have four more in the ground right now. And then, thanks to SARE for funding it, but we only asked for money to do the grain yield part, but then the growers said, you know, we're really interested in those grains because we can take them as early forage, late forage, or grain. And we said, great, we'll go out and sample them at all those points for you, and we'll get yield estimates and quality estimates. So we have like 1,000 samples now, but the goal is to rapidly develop the database. So we're looking at species effects. So you have winter wheat, triticale, you know, spring barley, whatever. We have a lot of grains involved here. We haven't got really big into this, but we've tried to include more than one variety of each. We do have some soil type effects. We certainly have climate effects when you go from Maine to Vermont. Planting dates, especially for fall grains, because we don't know what the critical day is where, you know, if you go after that day, you're pretty sure it's not going to work. Fertility of small grains. There are a number of other options, a smaller number that are being grown, again, in 1-acre blocks, 2-acre blocks on certified farms. A lot of these are farmer projects. Heather provided this list to me. Different types of grain production, breeding, all kinds of stuff. These are SARE-funded ones. These are projects that occur in Maine. They're also SARE-funded, mostly farmer-grower grants. So again, some of these actually preceded the really big projects, and some have been a result of those ongoing larger projects. Lastly, we do have an in-house ARS project in Orono called Nutrient Cycling and Utilization on Organic Dairy Farms. About this time frame, it'd probably go maybe a year longer than that. It is one of the few ARS projects that one is focused on organic production, but two is in more of an animal or livestock-based system rather than a crop or a horticultural system. We do some fairly basic work in the lab and in the greenhouse trying to improve the predictability of nutrient availability from manures and other sources on organic farms. We do field experiments on crop utilization and the potential for environmental loss, so we measure some nitrogen losses, we measure some phosphorus losses, and certainly economics, including budgeting, profitability, and risk, which really permeate a lot of the projects that I've just given as examples here, as does education and outreach. I mean, I've been talking about the research activity here. None of those projects is strictly research-oriented. They all have significant education and outreach components. This, I think, is the last slide, but I just wanted to come back to it because, to me, this is the real key, and this is the fun part of being able to do this. And to be able to fairly quickly, you know, 4 or 5 year time horizon, get projects in place that can hit some major components of that production system. They're not just all focused on grain, they're not just all focused on the animal, but we're trying to make those connections between those different components. And again, the growers in particular have shown a lot of leadership here in one kind of keeping us focused on what direction, but you know, formulating research questions is not that easy of a thing to do anyway. So with that, I'll stop, and if there are any questions, I'll take them if we have time, and thank you for your attention. Yes. The question was, how did we sit down and work together, and was I the delegated leader? I would, the second question, I would say no. There's certainly a core group of there's a core group of farmers in both states, and there's a core group of either researchers or extension and outreach people across all three states that have sat down in the same room periodically over the last 4 or 5 years. My role today is kind of the mouthpiece, to be quite honest. But I'm involved in a lot of those, but there are key people in every state in research, outreach, and on farms that have a pretty good network of communicating. And growers and extension people from Maine will go to Vermont and participate in educational programs and vice versa. It's not easy to get people into the same room. The large project that I talked about, we actually have, well, we always have a meeting every year, but sometimes it's twice a year, which is all of the extension and outreach people, but also the farmers who kind of keep us focused. And in fact, that meeting is next Monday. It'll be like the third or fourth one. So a lot of it's now, as you might imagine, is electronic. It's email, it's, you know, an hour conference call every 3 months, whatever you can do. So, and that's, it's a hard thing to manage that kind of stuff. Yes? Mm-hmm. Right. The question is kind of, what are the other barriers to developing a grain production system? I'll just speak for a moment about the dairy production system in Maine. Conventional or organic, most of those farms do not produce grain and have not produced grain. It's cold where we live. Corn is really, we can do corn for silage. Corn for grain is, we're just now getting there because we're now getting varieties that are short enough season. Small grains in Maine has been primarily in the potato industry, not on the, so a lot of the farms that we've worked with who are now doing these 1 and 2 acre blocks, you know, up until 2000, they may never have grown a grain, which means they may not have had a grain drill, they may not have had a combine, they may not, well, they certainly wouldn't have had storage. So you're dealing partly with that kind of historical context, certainly. And there are other projects, actually, and the issue of storage and being able to track identity of grains is a significant one. And there are some projects that I know of in Maine, and Heather could probably speak to ones in Vermont, that are dealing with also with those issues. But they are significant. It is a change in the production system for a lot of those growers, certainly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What the database that you're referring to consists of. So I'd like to hear more about that. I'm also wondering if you foresee getting beyond selection of forages into actual breeding and development.
Sure. Yeah. The question is, what is that database? That's the first question. Originally, what I would have answered is that we're just trying that the information that they were asking about didn't exist. So we're trying to develop that information. And this is my own opinion coming now, there's actually a need, and we're interested in doing this, and again, Peggy Panette, who works for me, is really good at this kind of thing, which is, can we develop that so it is actually an accessible database of the results of a lot of those research and education projects that are going on so that people can access that? you know, the key thing for me was, are we generating the kind of information that people need to be able to make decisions on their own farms? The technology that allows them to access that is really kind of a separate question, but it is a significant one. And what was the second part of the question, Mark?
Breeding on
forages. We haven't gotten involved in that to a great extent. We did, most of ours have been selection of just existing varieties, and I kind of go through results that go from North Dakota to Vermont, and we've picked out of that. We have started working a little bit, looking at some, for example, of the corn lines from that Linda talked about this morning, but not anything beyond that. There is really no capacity for doing that kind of work in New England right at this point within land grant institutions or federal. We'd have to go outside of that, but there's no boundary there. So, okay.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you.